The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
All right, Brian O'Driscoll is with us to talk to us about our depth charts. Brian, how are you?
I'm good, Ger, and you? Well, good. Sorry, I'm all right. No, I'm not good. I'm all right. That was the usual answer, but no, I'm managing.
Yeah, it's like zero crack this time. In summertime, it was like, oh, you know, we're all in this together, but it's not now. There's nothing. There's no redeeming features to this lockdown.
Nothing whatsoever. And yeah, it's like the problem is there's no light at the end of the tunnel either. You know, even though vaccine rollouts, it's impossible to know. Is it 2, 6, 9 months? It's just so frustrating. And then, you know, it's Groundhog Day. It's just the same. Like even at the weekends when you have a bit of time off, like go to the park, get a, if you don't want to cook, get a box from a restaurant around the corner if you can. I think we've just all tired of it.
Yeah, totally. And the homeschool is that's much fun as well.
Yeah, that's been intense. It's like the mine are of an age where they really need help, particularly my little fella who's only 6. So, he needs his attention span is shocking. It's like a boy of a 6-year old boy you would expect. So to try and just keep him at it, and then I think as well, it's really hard that they, we're not teachers, and there's methodology to it. And I think your own frustration then boils up as well when you can't explain it to them and they don't get it, and you run out of options of how to actually tell them or teach them something. I think that's just exacerbates an already difficult situation.
Yeah, it turns out repeating the same thing again and again and again doesn't work. She's like looking at me going, what?
The penny doesn't eventually drop. No, it's just, they just start the hating thing. You.
Yeah. The sooner this is all over, the better for all of us. At least we're going to have a couple of rugby matches. We think the first two games anyway should be in their bubbles, and we'll see what happens after that. We've been doing our depth charts and there's been a bit of controversy. Ron Nogara accurately predicted that Cooney wouldn't be in the squads. He was like, it's either Murray or Cooney. Cooney didn't make it, and there's been a bit of backlash about that. For the centres, I think, fingers crossed and touch wood, at the moment everybody's fit. So is this a relatively straightforward depth chart for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, I think so. I think it picks itself. I think there's been some very obvious choices for a number of years now. They've got a wealth of experience. Certainly, the top three in each position have a wealth of experience. And then there's someone that's been on the periphery, or a few people that have been on the periphery for quite a while that don't look as though, unless there's a string of injuries, that they're going to get in. So, I think the centres... We haven't managed to work out the perfect combination yet, and that's been through for a variety of reasons. Obviously, injuries to different individuals, so we've been playing different combinations. The occasional loss in form. It's not been that often that we've had a full deck to choose from. So we are looking at the players that are in form, and I think it's pretty obvious to me at the moment who those two are.
Okay, so let's start with 12. Number one, it's Robbie Henschel. Number two, it's Bundiaki. Three is Chris Farrell. And four is Stuart McCluskey. There was a while there where Bundiaki was slightly ahead and was getting picked in games, but never really when Robbie Henschel was fully fit.
No, in fairness to Bundy, I think he was playing better rugby at times last year than Robbie. I think there was a real consistency to his performances when he was playing for Connacht, when he was going back from international duty. He was turning up for big games. He was having big moments. Never really disappointed for Ireland. Certainly he started his international career extremely well for Ireland. And I don't think there's a huge amount between Robbie and him, but I do feel as though when both of them are on the top of their game, I think Robbie offers more. I think he defends better than Bundy. I think Bundy's a very good tackler, but I don't think he reads the game as well as Robbie Henschel does. Tackling is obviously two parts. It's the actual impact and getting your body position right and winning that collision zone. But it's way more than that. It's the understanding of who you're going to tackle first and foremost. And I think that's where Bundy, I wouldn't say he struggles with it, but I don't think he gets it to the same degree as Robbie. Robbie's ability to be able to see the short runner and understand via the body language of the ball player as to whether it's going to hit the short runner or player out the back, and his ability to read off a fraction earlier supersedes Bundy's ability to do that. And then if you look at a, you know, both of their attacking game, not overly dissimilar. Robbie's a bit of a better passer than Bundy. Both pretty good collision winners and ball carriers on the advantage line. Again, you know, looking at packing a punch, you say Robbie went at his pump is probably a little bit better than Bundy. So just small percentages ahead of him in almost every area, I think, has Robbie in the number 12 jersey.
Okay, the 13, we're going to do this together pretty quickly, then we might talk about some of the philosophy underpinning it. So Gary Ringrose, is he the clear leader at 13 at the moment?
Absolutely, no doubt. I think Gary Ringrose, from a very early age, from as early as I saw him in I think my final year in international camp, when he came in and was a bag holder, but then ran some plays against us, you could immediately see that he had a rugby intellect, you know, that far outweighed all of those peers that were playing with him, and lots of other players that we would have trained and played against. He understood angles of running. He understood, you know, timing of when to hit a pass, when to drift on a pass. So immediately, as a raw 19-year-old, you could see that he had huge capabilities. And, you know, his quick rise into the international reckoning was no great shock, having seen and trained against him. That's the lucky intel that you get as a player, of being able to see what guys are capable of in the training pitch. And I think that's why some guys aren't being included in the squad. And I don't know about John Cooney. Is he just not showing something at training? Because all well and good turning it on in matches, but you have to convince the coach throughout the week that you're the guy that's going to fill them with confidence to pick them at the weekend. If you don't do that, it's very hard to be selected and build that trust and confidence with the coach. So I do feel as though he offers something that no other centre in Ireland does. The fleet of foot, he's quick, good ball player, occasionally overplays his hand, maybe goes once or twice too many times himself, particularly when you've got, you know, the quality of Earls, Keenan, Larmer, Lowe outside you. You know, they're also very good ball players. So a lot, you know, maybe he could throw the odd pass more and then run as a support player. I think he'll pick up some more trail runner tries.
In your depth chart, you've got Robbie Henshaw 2, Chris Farrell 3, and then it's Jordan Larmer / Tom Farrell 4. We'll talk about Larmer and Farrell after. Is there a possibility that we might see in games like England, for example, they might decide that they want Bundy and Robbie Henshaw, they want that physicality in the team, and that actually Gary Ringrose isn't really up against another 13, he's up against his Leinster teammate?
I think it's dangerous going horses for courses, you know, when you're starting to change the combination, because then you don't get any fluidity as to what your best combination is. I think we're in all of that, we're forgetting, you know, that Chris Farrell's not far off, Robbie and Bundy as well. And I think you can fit Chris Farrell in a 12. I think we've got him, locked in as a 13 only. I'm sure, you know, at times when he's playing in the centre for Ireland or for Munster, he sometimes plays in the 12 jersey, even though if he's got 13 on the back for certain plays or in defensive setups. So I do think Chris Farrell has never done anything wrong for Ireland when he's played. Lovely hands for a big man. I just feel as though he doesn't offer that same X factor that Ringrose does. I think if you're looking at playing the attritional game, he's the obvious one to put in there with a Robbie Henshaw. If you're looking at crash, bang, wallop, getting advantage line and taking someone in an arm wrestle, which Ireland should never do, that's the combination that I'd be going for instead of Bundy and Henshaw, because Farrell is a real handful. He always makes a couple of yards over the advantage line, even in heavy traffic. He just doesn't have great wheels, and he doesn't have a wicked step that's going to cause a back line lots of headaches. So for that reason, I think Gary Ringrose possesses something that nobody else has, unless you wanted to throw Jordan Larmer in the 13 jersey. But I think Gary Ringrose's ability to defend and read through Similarly to Robbie Henshaw, is very strong part of his game.
There's some talk about Larmour, maybe because of the difficulties he had under the high ball, that he might not make the first 15 for the Wales game. It's hard to tell. It's a bit early yet. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think he did struggle under the high ball, and you know, when he was playing at full back, I think that was the one question mark around him. Is, you know, he'd a vastly improved kicking game from the guy that broke onto the scene. He'd worked, you know, hard at that. But I just don't think, even from a height point of view, but a timing point of view, there just was never that real certainty and confidence when he was going up for the balls that you felt he's going to own that, or he was getting himself in the perfect position. But for some reason, someone was getting an arm in. His timing wasn't quite right. He kind of missed the spot of where the ball was going to come down. And it's an art form. As we well know, that Rob Kearney, you know, had it down to a tee from very early on and made it look seamless. It's a very, very difficult skill, and one that he's continued to struggle with. And he's only a couple of games back from injury, so we'll cut him a little bit of slack. But I think on the basis of what we saw, you know, and the expectation of wingers, you've got to own your own ball, the balls that's kicked to you, or catch way more than 50% of that possession. And I don't think he did that at the weekend. We know what he can do on the front foot ball with ball in hand. But I just feel as though at the moment, he's probably a 23 player rather than a 15 player.
Do we ever get to see an experiment like Larmour in a centre in a match that's big enough so that we can judge him and that he has a support crew around him where it looks like it would do in a normal environment? And the other one, so Kieran Frawley's down on your list of next-gen players. Like, Frawley is essentially another out-half who might play at 12, and it would completely change what our attacking philosophy is. I'd like to see this at some point, but when do we actually get the opportunity to?
It's a good question. I think maybe, you know, usually on the summer tour of the Lions tour is usually the time where guys get in where ordinarily they wouldn't get an opportunity to go on tour. You get a chance in games that perhaps don't have the same impact or don't have the same coverage because a Lions tour is going on. If you think about the, you know, the games against Japan in previous years, or America and Canada, you know, it's, yes, we might be interested at home, you know, to cover newspaper inches, but ultimately everything is focused on the Lions tour. So I think there's an opportunity for guys to dip in and out of the international team there and get a bit of exposure against lesser opposition. Frawley, to your exact point, I don't think we have a 12 that possesses his skill set and could allow you to play the game slightly differently. So that's why I've chosen him in there, and why I'd like to see him pursuing the number 12 jersey as opposed to 10. I think there's more likelihood of him playing at 12 on an international level or for Leinster than there is at 10, considering the quality and the depth that is starting to come through. I wasn't sure about him initially. I think he still has to put on a bit of size. You know, he's quite a tall frame, but he's wiry. And internationally, it's a big physical step up. So he needs to throw on another little bit of size. But I think what he's capable of doing, bringing the ball to the line and throwing passes and the quality of pass, makes him very exciting.
This Six Nations feels particularly cutthroat, given where we are with Andy Farrell being a new head coach who has had some struggles and some wins, and is kind of about where on par with where you would expect to be. But at the same time, you know, does he have the job for the long haul? We're not entirely sure about that just yet. So if this goes pear-shaped, then all of a sudden the pressure ratchets up. So he's not going to be sticking in a match where we've got Kieran Frawley at 12 and Jordan Larmour at 13. That in the Six Nations here, it's like, no, give me Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw all day long, right?
Yeah, correct. He's you can look at the squad that he's picked for the first game. You know, there's very few bolters in there. He's brought in a small injection of youth, but for the most part, he's gone with the tried and tested. I think he feels, you know, there was a lot of pressure on that Scottish game in the November internationals. To remember that after a really disappointing performance against England and then another one in victory against Georgia, you know, that was a vital win. And it wasn't a perfect performance. It, you know, there was aspects that were good, but I think he definitely feels he's definitely result focused as well as development focused. You know, I wouldn't say anyone's sharpening knives yet, but you can't, I suppose, change a coach a year out from a World Cup. So I think there is a huge amount of onus and focus going to be put on this year's campaign as to how it goes and whether we've got the right coaching ticket. And it mightn't necessarily be Andy Farrell, you know, it might be somebody else that maybe it just isn't quite working. They're bringing Paul O'Connell in, they've got more IP there. So I think they're building a, you know, something positive, but now they do need the results to go their way. And if you look at things, the strength of England, the strength of France at the moment, you know, there's if Ireland can do better than third in this year's Six Nations, well, I think that would be a huge win.
In terms of the younger players there, so what's the story with Tom Farrell, James Hume and Tommy O'Brien? Why are they on the fringes of a list like this?
Because they're still, I think talent-wise, they're still behind the other guys. They are, that's the reality. And Tom Farrell, I played and trained with him a little bit at Leinster. He was a nice player, you know, a little bit injury prone maybe back then. But, you know, hugely impressed with his ability to be able to move on from Leinster and find a place for him, find a home and become an important player for Connacht last year. Again, he's been a little bit unfortunate with injury this year. Similarly, over there, Tom Daly, another guy that picked up some injuries in the academy in Leinster, but has gone well for Connacht. But I do feel if you're looking at, you know, at top class operators, they're on the rung below the likes of Henshaw and Ringrose and Farrell. And Larmer, that's the reality of it. But, you know, I think the gulf is less substantial than perhaps we felt it might have been. I think they'd come in and do a relatively good job for you. I haven't seen enough of James Hume to fully know what he's capable of. I did like the little bit of aggro that he had in the Toulouse game. I think he was just got a little bit narky with someone, little shoulder drop walking by someone. I think that's always nice to see in a young lad, that he's not afraid to kind of throw his size around. He's a big unit, you know, he's 100 kg, 6'2". I just don't know whether he's got the all-round game to make it at an international level. So I'm interested to watch more of him at European level, although I see Luke Marshall's back now in the mix, back from a long-term injury. So it'll be interesting to see who plays in the first-choice centre partnership for Ulster.
And Tommy O'Brien?
Tommy O'Brien and Jimmy O'Brien. You know, Jimmy O'Brien's played a couple of times for Leinster in the centre as well. Tommy O'Brien's played very well the few times that he's been given a start. Jimmy probably, you know, looks as though he's a better footballer. So whether, you know, he's not being typecast only as a fullback. I think he's played on the wing. He's played at 13. I think both of them look like nice players. And I'd love to see Jimmy being given an opportunity at 13. You know, we saw Ross Byrne playing there against Ulster a couple of weeks ago and actually did quite well. You know, maybe it would have been a great opportunity. I know that they had a string of injuries, Leinster. It would have been lovely to have seen Jimmy O'Brien in that 13 jersey to see what he's capable of. He's got an offload game. He doesn't like dying with the ball. He's elusive. So, you know, we should adapt the French approach where we can play multiple positions and don't just hone in on one, provided you don't become that utility back that ultimately only ever becomes a 23-man squad player rather than nailing down a starting berth.
Yeah, the ability to play anywhere, but actually get a run at it at some point.
It's your best players on the park as well, Jerry, you know, and that's the question about Larmer, you know. If you're very attacking mind, you've attacking mindset and attacking orientated, do you look at trying to find, if a Gary Ringrose is injured, do you look at finding a spot for Jordan Larmer at 13 if you've got a fully stacked back three? I think that's where there is capabilities. Larmer played 13 for Ireland against England in the Grand Slam game over in Twickenham a few years ago. He came off the bench and played for 10 or 15 minutes. Got caught once on defense. It's an art form to be able to learn to read those situations at 13 as well. And that's where Ringrose has really nailed down his spot. But I do feel as though he's more of a bolter in that position because I don't think he has the same vision as some of the other lads.
One last question then, in terms of what you expect from your centre partnership. Like, the Mike Catt team hasn't yet fully revealed itself, like what we will be when his vision as a creative force is brought to bear fully on that. So what do you expect to see? What kind of progress can we look for from our centre partnership, and just how they interact with the rest of the team? Obviously, it doesn't have to focus too much on the centres, but what should we be looking for?
Well, I think it's very dependent on what the game plan looks like and how focused you are on launch plays or on setup plays. I'm intrigued to see what the evolution of the November game plan looks like in Six Nations. I'd imagine it's not going to be vastly different. I think they're a small bit caught up in going down too many blind sides at the moment, and they're running into heavy traffic. I would prefer to see them, to see Ireland try to go the same way and try and stretch opposition around the corner. And I think that's where the centres, particularly the likes of Ringrose, will get someone on an edge, just get someone on an outside shoulder and get an offload. And you're not talking about huge, big line breaks here and many of them. You're talking about one or two in a game where you get your hands free and someone runs a great support line and all of a sudden that's a try. That's the difference between winning in the really tight Six Nations games. It's not a multitude of, of 100 yards of line breaks and tearing teams up. That happens once in a blue moon, maybe against Italy, maybe against one of the poorer teams. Against better opposition, you don't get that free rein. So I'd like to see Ireland, rather than just using their centres as battering rams, I'd love to see the elusiveness of what they can do. All of them can be ball players. All of them are skillful. All of them can offload, push the pass a little bit more and have players running those short lines off them. Because, they're big, collision winners, Farrell, Henshaw, Bundy, capable of throwing those 50-50s. We've seen the success with Leinster. Throw the pass, because that's what we're going to need to actually beat the likes of England and France, rather than playing 20-25 phases and beating ourselves up.
Yeah. Good stuff, Brian. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, Ger.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.